Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from sex style to gossip.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night of Max and Friends. Well, if it's your first time joining us, welcome to the show. And if you've been on this road for 10 years, thank you for being part of it. You can follow me on Twitter at Max Tucci, on Instagram at Max Tucci Radio. I know you all been getting on me about Twitter and at Max Tucci Radio, because actually, tonight, you know, I'm transparent with you. We're doing a pre-record because it's Thanksgiving week. Actually, I'm in LA right now. It's Sunday night. The Sunday before Thanksgiving. Tonight is, what, the 18th of November. So this show is going to air next Sunday after Thanksgiving. So I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. But tonight I was at dinner with my girl, Eva LaRue. And she's like, shame on you. You haven't posted on at Max Tucci Radio since May 21st. Because that's kind of like when we went on hiatus for the show. And then I was like, all right, I'll pick it up eventually. You know, but life goes on with or without social media. You know, I love the phrase that they go, if it hasn't happened on social media, it hasn't happened. Well, that's not my how life. My life works. Because my life works when it works, and it just happens naturally, and I let it unfold naturally. So tonight, I hope you're all doing well. How was your Thanksgiving? Let's act as if it were, because I will be on Twitter the night of Thanksgiving, actually the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know how was your Thanksgiving? And what did you do? Where are you? What are you doing? What's going on? How's life? How's life treating you? Well, you know, I guess Black Friday too, and then tomorrow would be Cyber Monday. So are you all into all that stuff? Let me know. You know, for me, it's just like, whatever. It's Cyber Monday, Black Friday, all these things we gotta, you know, vary the commercialness of holidays. For me, I'm going to be in Pennsylvania. And let's just say I just got back from Pennsylvania. Pre-records are so weird because, you know, you guys know me. Like, I just love to jump in front of the mic and speak in the now. So to speak in the future is actually really groovy. But I get tongue-tied and twisted because it's not in the present. It's next week. So anyway, tonight we're going to have a fun time because I've got a great guest joining me tonight. Kazi Togana is going to join me. Awesome actor. He's doing a film with Denzel Washington called The Equalizer 2. And y'all have seen him on Law & Order, on Blue Bloods, Standing 8. We're going to talk about that tonight because that's won 11 festival awards. And it's going to be released on Amazon at the beginning of 2019, which is like just around the corner. 2019. How was 2018 for you guys? Are you all like wishing it was almost over? Are you wishing for 2020? Whenever I say 2020, I always think of Barbara Walters. You know, what's interesting, we haven't seen or heard from Barbara Walters. And you know why? I was going to talk about her on the show that I'm doing tonight. So last week's show, because it's interesting. Barbara Walters was a huge influence in my life and why I do Max and Friends. Because when I was little, I used to walk through my property in Connecticut and I used to do these faux interviews. And my mom would be like, who are you talking to? I was like, Barbara Walters. She's like, what? I say, yes, I'm walking around the property and I'm showing her how I live. And then I've met her throughout the years. And but there's like, it's sad because allegedly she's in her apartment, not doing well, not remembering things or who people are. And she's kind of confined to her apartment. So that's why we haven't seen her. But today I was watching, there's a show on Netflix, series rather, about the 80s and the 90s. And you see certain like cameos from Barbara Walters. And I would love to know what Barbara Walters has to think about what's going on in the times right now and how everything is unfolding. And I would love to hear a perspective of it because as a journalist, Barbara Walters was amazing. And she always asked the questions that people were like too scared to ask. And she went it with like full thrust and she didn't care if she offended you or not. Or maybe she did care. I don't know if she cared or not. But what I do know is that she would ask the questions. And that's one of the reasons why I love and miss seeing Barbara Walters. So sending some love and light to Barbara Walters. But tonight here on Max and Friends, we're going to have a good time because we've got two actors. It's like total, the male energy is in the studio tonight. And I have to say thank you to Anka, who made it all possible. So tonight here on Max and Friends, sit back, relax, be part of the show. Tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know what's going on in your life. We're going to play some songs from my buddy Asher, who is, and from Ari Gold, who was on the show last week. So sit back, relax, enjoy the show. And as for right now, welcome my guest, Kazi Togona, to Max and Friends. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Max? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. You know, I'm reading your bio here, and I'm like, okay, Law and Order. I was like, I bet if I showed my picture of you to my mother, she'd be like, I saw him on this, I saw him on that, I saw him on this, I saw him on that. You've been acting. Why acting? What has acting done for your – why did you become an actor? Let's put it that way.
Well, becoming an actor for me was really an instinctual career choice. Prior to acting, I owned a 24-hour diner in Newark, Delaware, right outside of the University of Delaware. And I was working really, really hard. Unfortunately, the place had to close on to no fault of my own. And it kind of, when that career path kind of ended, it forced me to a fork in the road, and I had to make a decision of what I really wanted to do. And I had always had this affinity for the entertainment industry and acting and film. And after visiting an open house for the New York Film Academy, I just realized that acting was really what I wanted to do. And I went full throttle, took out a loan, went back to school after we closed the diner. And it was just a thing where I was just, I can't really put it into anything other than me just following my instincts and really being real with and following my heart and saying yes to this dream that at the time seemed so unattainable, but for whatever reason, I overwhelmingly wanted to pursue it.
You know, it's great
and
that
I
you say
really
that.
I really haven't put that.
Because here, you know, on Max and Friends, we talk a lot about like heart virtues and why it's important to like listen to what your calling is. Because that's really when I think the universe rises up to meet you. I love that you were in the restaurant industry because, you know, I don't know if you know or not, but that's what my family is in. And Delmonico's restaurant in New York, America's first fine dining restaurant. But the point being is that it is like the shittiest industry to be in. So when you said, unfortunately, or maybe that was fortunately that it closed, because, you know, when you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do, things will shift in order for you to get to that. But you were also a boxer. So tell us about Golden Gloves Boxer. What does that mean?
Well, Golden Gloves Boxing means I was in the amateurs. So I fought out of Left Jab Boxing Club in West Grove, Pennsylvania. Cliff Johnson is the trainer there. It's a small little gym. And it was another one of those instinctual type of choices where I just was following my heart. Prior to boxing, I actually was a competitive figure skater, and I competed and won collegiately for a few years. And just kind of that my path in that sport kind of just – got frustrated with it and kind of walked away without even looking back. But I had always, again, it was like I had this affinity for boxing and I really wanted to learn. And I ended up, you know, maybe a few months after I hung up the skates, I walked into a boxing gym and laced them up. And at first I really just wanted to learn how to box, not, you know, just train, stay in shape. You know, I didn't want to be one of these skaters who quit skating and then, you know, put on 50 pounds. So I was like, I just want to stay in shape and I want to do something I've always wanted to do. But, you know, after training for, you know, about maybe 6 months, Cliff felt like I was good enough to compete. And then I started to take that road of, you know, signing up for Golden Gloves fights, fighting in the tournaments. And that was a whole adventure in itself. I was used to performing in front of crowds as a skater, but getting punched in the face in a crowd is a whole different sport. You know, but it's funny that the irony is that I traded in one extremely subjective sport, which figure skating is, you know, it's completely left in the judge's hands. And boxing is very similar in that respect, that it is very subjective. You still have judges who decide the outcomes if there's no knockout. And I just, the only difference was, again, I could punch my competition in the face, which was satisfying. Even if you lost, you know, you got the guy a few times. So it was one of those experiences that I absolutely...
Was it easier to punch somebody in the face or land from like some kind of like a triple axel, if you can even do that?
I guess that really depends on who you're fighting, right? Because some guys are really quick and it's hard to hit them, you know?
Right. No, it's like from one extreme to the next. Unless you're like, you know, what's Tonya Harding. Then you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, you get the best of both worlds. She's one of the few that had, because she boxed, right? She quit. She stopped skating and she ended up going
and went into boxing. Yeah. Maybe that's a common thread between figure skaters and going, you know, to get that frustration out, get into the boxing.
Oh, both are very tough sports in their own respect.
They totally are.
They both require a level of commitment. And a lot of times what people don't realize, you know, like individual sports like that, there's a lot of pressure on the athlete.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have a team around you to work with you and help you get through difficult times. It's really just you and your own ability to control the way you approach and a lot of your mentality, and you realize how important attitude is and your outlook, and that's incredibly important for both sports. It's very psychological.
Wow.
You know, you have to be physically talented, but
I never thought of like a solo sport where it's just you and you got to carry. It's like basically this show. I got to carry it myself, but I got great guests like you to help me get it through. But you know, my producer asked me, and I love the question because they just sent me a note. Where does your name Kazi Togana come from? What's your ethnicity?
Togana, my full name is Kazimera. So
you're Lithuanian.
Lithuanian.
You know.
Yeah.
My mom is Lithuanian too.
No way.
Yeah. Do you speak Lithuanian?
No way.
Yo, mano mama ashirge. Mano mama sokretinga. Yo. Look, we're like totally brothers now. We're Lithuanian brothers. Wow. This is wild. So groovy. Well, you know, I know you love your mom because I'm reading here, like Lithuanian moms are the best, and you know that, right?
Yeah.
And I'm reading here that your mom was diagnosed with lupus. So that, and now you're working, I'm reading this, after being diagnosed, okay, so we got a lot to talk about. You know, when I have guests on the show, so you know who I am, I don't read everything about them because I want it to just unfold naturally so like I can experience who you are in that moment, like my listeners. And it's something that I learned kind of from Oprah. She's like, I don't really like get to know everybody at first. But I'm reading this and I'm like, holy shit, we got a lot to talk about. But before we get into that, let's get into the film, The Equalizer 2, co-starring Denzel Washington. First of all, how was it to work with Denzel?
Oh, I mean, Denzel's a force of nature. It was one of those moments in your life where you kind of feel like, okay, everything has been leading up to this. Mm-hmm. And prior to even acting, I was a huge fan of Denzel. Mm-hmm. I've been watching him since I was a kid. And to hear that booming voice walk on, you know, when he walks on set and he starts talking, it's like probably one of the most recognizable voices in the world, recognizable faces in the world. Mm-hmm. And you know, at first there's that layer of intimidation, but you kind of just get past that because you know you got some serious work to do. He and I, our sequence is pretty physical. Mm-hmm. And you just get to work because he's so intense and he's such a force. It's like you're jumping in the middle of a tornado and you better hold your ground, otherwise you're gonna get eaten alive. So I felt like working with him definitely helped me just step up my game, you know?
Tell us about the role. Who were you and what was your role in Equalizer 2?
For sure. I played Ari. The film now clearly has been out for a while, so I can get into some more details. Ari, there's a four-member team that McCall, Denzel's character, used to run with before he faked his own death and went into retirement. So I play Ari, and my partners are Resnick, Kovac, and York, played by Pedro Pascal. And we were a special ops team, you know, working for the government. And when he faked his own death, our team was disbanded, but we started to go private and kept working together. And in Equalizer 2, we cross McCall unknowingly, and it puts us at this where we're basically two opposing forces are going to come crashing together, and that's what happens is we kill one of his friends, and of course you don't do that to McCall, and of course we come to our fitting end at the end of the film.
was playing.
So
a
Ari is just a bad guy. You know, I'm a bad
total
guy
villain
who kills people for money and
you
know, doesn't have too many qualms about it.
Was that a
it's
challenge
funny,
for
deleted
you
scene
to play that role?
Go ahead.
Was that a challenge for you to play that role?
Well, you know, my approach for villains is pretty simple. I really just think of them as people too. And you know, some people might think that sounds funny, but the truth is that they're just motivations are coming from a different place, and their moral and ethical codes are just slight right, slight left, or far right, far left of what the average person thinks. So I don't think of them as actual villains as much as people that just are doing what they want to do for whatever reason.
Yeah, their reality.
Equalizer. Right? Yeah, exactly. And Equalizer toothpaste, you know, we're taking people out for money, and that's how you live, and that's what you do. It's just like, instead of the guy who goes to the grocery store, goes to Trader Joe's to work, I go to, you know, I go to a house and I help kill a family.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
and you just treat it as such. You know, I don't think you need to put much on it. And, you know, luckily when I was on set, I had some really great people on the stunt team, you know, former special ops guys, former Navy SEAL. And I was able to pick a lot of their brains because, you know, they were in situations that were incredibly dangerous at times and had to deal with very dangerous people. And I really was able to kind of formulate a really good kind of, you know, character in my mind after, you know, picking brains of guys that had actually, you know, operated in those fields. And I think Antoine Fuqua is just really great at picking fantastic people to crew up with. Outside of his incredible directing, he's just really good at putting people together. So I think, especially for this film, I was able to make good character choices just based on the people that I was surrounded with.
Yeah. Now, you were going to say there was a deleted scene. Were you getting into the deleted scene, I think I heard?
Oh, yeah. So in the actual film, you know, they cut a scene where I actually, there's the inciting event to our climactic battle with McCall is the fact that we killed his family in Brussels. And in the theatrical cut of the film, the father and the mother get killed. But in the deleted scenes, you see that the kid ends up coming home right after we kill his parents. And my partners look at me like, well, are you going to do it? And there's like this moment of reluctance where I'm just like, you know, I really need to have me kill a kid.
Right.
And they actually play that. They play that in the deleted scenes, which probably for a theatrical release was a little much. But the deleted scene was I liked it because it kind of showed you the different personalities of these villains and, you know, where they were at as far as, you know, what they were willing to do, what they weren't willing to do, and how they treated this scenario that most people would never even dream of participating in. So definitely watch the deleted scenes if you get it on iTunes.
Absolutely. On iTunes. See, there you go. I was just going to ask you where you can get it. So you can get it on iTunes. But now let's get into, well, you know, speaking of getting things, how can people get in touch with you? What's your social media, your tags, your IDs and all of that?
My social media of choice is Instagram, and it's just Kazi Toganus. And then I also have a Facebook page, Facebook fan page, and it's official Kazi Toganus. So
there you go.
KazyTauganus.
There you go. Now, let's talk about something that's close to your heart, because tell us about your award-winning short film, Standing Eight. We got to talk about that, because I know that's near and dear to you. So let's get into Standing Eight.
Yeah, for sure. Standing Eight is a short film about a professional boxer who was forced to retire after being diagnosed with systemic lupus. Clearly, as you mentioned before, you know, my mother has been fighting the disease for over 40 years now.
As
I got older, it's funny because when I was younger, I didn't really realize how sick my mom was. She doesn't broadcast to everyone how
she's
sick
Lithuanian.
She is.
You know? Hello.
Lithuanian. She doesn't complain. She
Nothing.
Just, you know, just digs in and rolls with the punches.
They are
survivors,
you know, Lithuanians.
Exactly.
I know firsthand. Now, wait, before we get into Standing Eight, was your mom born in Lithuania? Did she flee, or was she born in the States?
No, my mother was born in the States.
Okay.
My family on both sides escaped from Lithuania when the Soviets invaded.
My mom, too. In 1945, my mom... They lived in like the DP camps in Germany for 5 years before they came to Brooklyn. So I'm sure we share a lot of the same stories. That's why I know Lithuanian women. Those are some strong, resilient, and they don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
Like when they keep a secret with them for a long time. So I know what you're saying there. But so was she the inspiration for Standing Eight?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. A few years ago, my production team and we just wanted to do a short project, kind of like as just a warm up, you know, because like the main goal is always to make a feature film. And we started bouncing ideas around. And at the time, I had not been cast to play a boxer. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was a little frustrating, you know, considering I had 13 amateur bouts and I really didn't know what I was doing when it came to boxing. And I was overlooked a few times for some pretty big roles. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to write something for myself. And, you know, I really wanted to do something that was like socially conscious. So we debated of how we could involve Lupus into the storyline. Mm-hmm. And one of my producers said, well, why don't you just have the boxer get diagnosed with lupus? So you just keep it all contained. And I was like, oh my God, that's a fantastic idea. And I wrote the first draft at the end of 2014. And in about 4 hours, I just banged out the whole thing. And we started to move on it. You know, everyone agreed on it. They liked it. And in the original draft, the boxer hides the fact that he's sick. Mm-hmm. But the story kind of evolved to the point where he finds out he's sick and then he's forced to retire because the boxing commission they pull his license, and it's him contending with life outside of the ring and trying to navigate his way through the world where he can't do what he loves most. Yeah. So the film was just it's really a love letter to my mother. Wow. I don't really know any other way to put it.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand the journey of lupus warriors. They don't understand what the disease even does. And if your listeners don't know, lupus is an autoimmune disease where the body's healthy organ and tissues are attacked by the immune system because the immune system can no longer differentiate between good and bad cells. So basically your own immune system is trying to kill you. It can absolutely be fatal. You know, if it attacks your heart, it attacks your lungs. If it can attack your kidneys, it can attack your skin, it can attack your brain. You know, it affects everyone differently.
So, because of that, now you're involved in different projects working with lupus organizations. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Well, when I was actually on the red carpet for Equalizer, I wore a lupus pin. I thought that, you know, that was going to be a really high profile event, and maybe the least I could do was raise a little awareness, you know. So I figured I'd wear a little purple lupus pin on my lapel, and the Lupus Foundation of America somehow caught wind of it, and they reached out and they wanted to talk to me and see what that was about. And of course, with doing a little research, you know, they saw the trailer for Standing Eight, and it blossomed into this relationship, this very symbiotic, beautiful relationship that we have with the foundation.
And what I want our listeners to know about Standing Eight, first of all, it won 11 festival awards. Y'all need to know that. And it's going to be released on Amazon at the beginning of 2019 with proceeds actually going to the Lupus Foundation of America, right?
Correct. I'm going to, my original plan was, because the film was always was Kickstarter funded. So I got donations to put the money, you know, the money was all coming from people that we crowdfunded. So there was absolutely no way that I could profit from the film. There's just morally, that's not the right thing to do. So my decision was that if we did put the movie out and we were able to distribute, that any of the profit that we made, I would donate to a lupus organization. Of course, after the foundation reached out and I talked to them, and you know, they sent a beautiful email to me when they first reached out, and I'll never forget it, because they asked, you know, what they could do to help my mother, if there was anything that they could do. And that was the first time in my entire life that anyone asked what they could do to help. We've had, you know, people come in and out of our lives, you know, friends, family that just kind of ignore you after you can't socialize. You know, my mom can't even get out of bed some days, and people are taking it personally, like she's being antisocial, and that's not the case. So my parents had felt very isolated, I think, for a really long time, and to have someone to just say, hey, is there anything that we can do to help, really, really hit home. And after that, I was like, of course, this is who I'm going to donate to. And they're going to help promote our release. And we're working together with them because Standing Aid is going to be a tool to raise lupus awareness. There's no doubt about it. People are going to watch the film and they're going to want to know more. So absolutely. I couldn't think of any better way for this film to kind of end its run after we've played at, you know, 28 festivals worldwide. We actually have our last festival coming up in a week, actually not even a week, in a few days, playing in Birmingham in the UK.
Wow.
So I'm really excited. That's where we're going to finish our run in the UK, and early 2019. We haven't decided on an exact release date yet, but early 2019 we'll be releasing on Amazon.
Well, you're going to have to come back here and we'll definitely talk about it. But what I love is that, you know, it's always the way, like when you know, like attract like. So if you're out there doing things, you know, that will highlight or share the story of people living with certain diseases, you know, something will rise up. The universe will rise up and meet you. And I love that the Lupus Foundation of America, like, contacted you. And, you know, and all it takes is sometimes one of those little pins like that, and someone says, I see you, I hear you, and you matter. You know, and I love that they noticed. So, you know, I mean, that story in itself is so inspirational. So for anyone who thinks, you know, what is this pin or what can I do? Sometimes all it takes is, you know, the eye is on the sparrow sometimes. You know, and that little thing is blowing up into a big thing. So I look forward to seeing Standing Eight for sure. Congratulations on the 11 Festival Awards. That's super dope. And there's so much to talk about. You're shooting another big budget movie, which we can't talk about, which is like, really? Can you give us a hint?
You'll just have to look me up on IMDb and see what we got in the works. It's going to be huge. It's going to be a huge film.
That's cool.
But I can talk about my upcoming trip to Vietnam where I'll be shooting
Invisible Love.
I'm shooting Invisible Love, which is a drama that I'm really looking forward to, because, you know, most of the time when people think you're going to Vietnam that you're going to be shooting a war movie, but this is actually a period piece that takes place in 1930.
Awesome.
So it's not what you would typically expect for a piece that's shooting in Asia.
And what role?
So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm playing a doctor, a disgraced American doctor who loses his ability to practice due to malpractice in the States and goes to Vietnam so that he continue practicing.
Wow. Ooh, that's going to be good. That's cool. All right. Well, there's a lot going on in your life. So I'm grateful that you had a few minutes to come here before you. Have you ever been to Vietnam?
I have not. I have not.
We're going to look at your Instagram.
Although my father got drafted back in the day. So
he's
my dad actually, he never actually went overseas. He ended up getting pulled off the line and ended up becoming a military police officer and served out his time as military police. So he never went over there. So I know he lost a lot of buddies in Vietnam. So this trip is going to carry some meaning outside of just as like a career move. But I think, I think it's important that I just go over there because I know that he lost a lot of buddies, and it's difficult. You know, that was a difficult time for people. And I think it's kind of weird how things come full circle. You know, he didn't go, but I'm going to be going. So I'm looking forward to that trip.
Cool. Have you ever been to Lithuania?
I have not.
Oh,
I have not.
You have to go. I've been. Actually a super cool country. You got to check it out. All right, I'm going to the rabbit. They're like shouting. I can sit here and just talk for the rest of the night with you, and we could talk about Lithuania and like Zeppelin and like all the food all night, but we got to wrap this up. So before we go, you know, I always like to give advice to my listeners, but what's some advice you give for some upcoming actors? What do you tell people who want to get into this industry of acting?
Well, I think that you're going to have to work. Okay. I think there's really no way around it. I think that if you really find it in your heart that you want to be an actor, that you want to pursue this as a career, not a hobby, you have to put in work and you have to pour your heart and your soul into it. And a lot of times people think, I know there's this kind of thing where like, oh, I'm good enough, I'll get discovered. Mm-hmm. The chances of you being seen on the street by someone that's casting a $100 million film and says, you're my guy, the chances of that happening are literally maybe 1 in 50 million. So you take that idea and you throw it out and you think, if I'm going to learn to do something, if I was going to learn to be an electrician, wouldn't I go to school to do that? Or if I'm going to learn to be, if I'm going to learn how to develop software, won't I go to school to do that? Well, acting is no different. You have to go back to school. You have to learn. You have to develop a set of skills, and then you build from there. Yeah. And after you develop that set of skills from going back to school, you start to take control of your career and the idea that you can develop content. And you have to find a group of people that are like-minded, that are hungry, that are positive, because I'm a firm believer in you are who you associate with. Mm-hmm. And you have to surround yourself with hungry, like-minded, positive people. Yeah. Because the world, as we know, is difficult enough. So you have to keep yourself on a path. And I think goal setting and having a very clear vision of where you want to go is probably the most important thing of all. So cool. I know it's a multifaceted type of answer.
No,
there's
perfect.
No just like one particular thing to mention, but it's like, you know, you kind of have to, you have to look at the big picture and you have to be real with yourself as to what you want to do, but it's always going to take work. There's really no way around it. You know, you want to excel at anything, you're going to have to put in time.
That's right. You got to do your work. Well, I'm grateful, Kazi, that you were able to join us here tonight on Max and Friends. We're going to keep in touch with you. You'll come back when Standing Eight comes out so we can talk about that on air. So I'm grateful for you being here tonight. And I look forward to having you back on soon. I just hit you up on Instagram, so we'll continue the conversation there, and we'll have to get our mothers
right,
to say hi to each other. All right,
<Yeah.
laughs> cool, my brother. Have a great night, and thank you so much. And safe journeys and travels. And I look forward to seeing your adventures in Vietnam. Invisible love.
All right.
Have a great night.
Thanks
so much.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, you too.
Bye, Kaki.
Okay. Bye, Anka.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Coming up next, we've got a great guest. David Calloway is joining us from Green Book. But right now, we're going to play a song from Ashru's Most Beautiful Light. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Ashura's Most Beautiful Light. Welcome back. So I'm... Kazi is cool, right, y'all? But we got another great guest tonight here. David Calloway from Green Book is joining us at Max and Friends. I told you it was a good show tonight. So thank you, Anka, for that show. But without any further ado, let's pull up my next guest, David Calloway, to Max and Friends. How you doing?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, man, I am good. To tell you the truth, I am a bit fucked up because I don't know what's going on in this studio right now. And there's like calls coming in and people going around. And I'm just glad that you're here and we're here in this present moment. So
that's all good. What's good in L.A. tonight? You're in L.A., right?
I'm in L.A. You know what? To tell you the truth, I'm looking out the window. There's like, it's Sunday night here in L.A. There's no traffic. Everyone's chill. I think the fires put everyone at like this pause. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like a freaky little bit ghost town where people are like exhausted from everything. So I love L.A. right now. The air is good and everyone's good. So here we are and you're on the show. How are you?
Some heavy
David
stuff, man.
Calloway.
I lived in LA. I was in LA for 18 years, man. I lived there for 18 years. So I know, you know, it's crazy. I saw the fire stuff, man. I'm glad things are kind of hopefully getting a little bit better out there. But
they can. You know, so, I got to say, before we get into this interview, you can be seen in so many different movies, from The Rainmaker with Francis Ford Coppola and Matt Damon to The People versus Larry Flint with Woody Harrelson and Edward Norton and on and on and on. You are like, that's good for you. And then you moved to LA, I'm reading here, and then you got into a sci-fi series of Sliders, and then with Aaron Spelling, of course.
And you're reaching way back. I like that about you.
We're going back to, like, you know, the genesis of your acting day.
You're going way back.
Right? Cool. And then
go ahead. Sorry.
No, and then you got what? Tell me.
Oh, I was going to say, I did all that stuff back then. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, and I did The Rainmaker and worked with Coppola, and then I got to work with Milos Forman on the People versus Larry Flint. And then from that, I moved out to L.A. I was young, and, you know, right away got a couple of jobs, got that the Slider show, and then did another show for Aaron Spelling called Sunset Beach. It was a soap opera, so... It was just kind
you
of
were
like
on Sunset Beach?
I
remember Sunset Beach.
Yeah, man.
That's
you really?
One of my very good friends, Eva LaRue, you know, she was on All My Children. So,
we sit back
and we talk about all the those shows. And then there's these new series. I don't know if you've seen them on Netflix, like 80s and 90s. They do like the decades. And they talk about like all these shows. They're pretty wild. So we were talking about, all of that.
I'm not even joking with you. I swear on my life, right when I left the other room, I'm watching right now the 80s one that you're talking about.
Oh, wait, what?
It's on.
What series? What episode? It's so good.
I don't know. My girl was put it on, and we were just sitting there watching it. I watched it for like the past 45
minutes.
Isn't it
addictive?
And it went through the whole computer thing, and then it went through the – so right now we're watching the music part of it.
Oh, MTV.
Where all the music stuff's spinning.
Yeah, about MTV. Oh, it's one of the best because you really realize what, like, you know, the 80s were, like, amazing. And I love how, like, it's a great series. Tom Hanks actually produced it. But let's talk about you. We got to talk about you.
We'll
throw out the questions because you were saying all these productions have you done. What has been one of your favorite productions that you've worked on?
One of the favorites as of most recent, man, there's quite a few, obviously, but the ones that would be like the most memorable are probably going to be the ones that I've worked on the longest, you know, for the length of time that you're on there. Cause then you really get a chance to like bond with, the crew and the cast and so on. So like probably one of the most favorites of the recent would be the movie I did called The Magnificent Seven with, Chris Pratt and Ethan Hawke and Vincent D'Onofrio and a newcomer named Denzel Washington.
Right.
And, and then those guys, who else was in that? There's so many people in that movie. It was amazing. I got to be on it for like 3+ months, in the swamps of Louisiana. It was hot as hell. And we were wearing period costume and everybody was horribly miserable. And, we got shut down every other day for rain and lightning delays because the weather was so just horrible. But that being said, man, it was horrible, miserable, but I'd do it again. If they called me right now and said, do it again, I'd be all over it. Cause it was just, I made lifelong friends out of that movie. I got cast in another film. Ethan Hawke cast me in a movie that he was directing, or he did direct, called Blaze, which recently was at the Sundance Film Festival last year. So out of that movie, a lot of things came, and that was one of my favorite productions for sure. Yeah. You know,
well, I want to talk about Green Book. So tell us a little bit about your character in Green Book.
Green Book is an interesting, well, first of all, the movie itself is amazing. Peter Farrelly is just a brilliant, and it was so much fun to do that movie. It was pretty intense. I mean, for whatever reason, I guess I get cast in these racially, I don't know, terrifying roles. But, you know, so Green Book, to expound on that, Green Book, the role that I was playing in that was a character, his name is Ray. Mm-hmm. And basically I'm in a bar when Mahershala comes in, he has some drinks. We come across Mahershala. We beat him up a little bit. And then Vigo, his character, Tony Lip, comes into the bar to save Mahershala's character, which is played, he plays Don Shirley. And I kind of get into a little argument with Vigo, and we have a little standoff. He's about to pull a gun, I pull a knife, and a little intensity ensues. It's pretty intense for sure, you know. But I played a character from the Deep South in the 60s, and yeah, you know how that goes. So,
of course. You know. And this is like, you know, for people who are listening tonight, Green Book is actually inspired by a true story. Dr. Don Shirley is a world-class African-American pianist who's about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South in 1962. In need of a driver and protection, y'all got to watch the film to get the rest. But how was it to work with Vigo and Rashala? That must have been dope to work with Vigo.
Man, it was so great working with those guys. I mean, look, you're working with two Oscars. Well, Vigo's been nominated, I don't know how many times, three or four times for Academy Awards. Mahershala won that year. And, I have a feeling he'll probably get another nomination for this after seeing the film. So, you know, you're working with those guys on that level. And it's just, it's a whole other thing when you work with guys to that stature. Like, they just, in fact, Vigo was like, he was so cool. He was in character, but he would break character. And he, when we were working, I had to pull the knife on him, and he's like, here, let me show you something. And he starts like working with me and showing me how to, like, what a good way to hold the knife would be. And I'm just having these flashbacks of like Eastern Promises and all these movies that he's been in where he's like, you know, going to town with knives and whatever. I'm just like, oh my, a history of violence.
It's so funny. Well, I love it. When you think of Vigo, you go to that one. I think of Vigo, I think of like 28 Days.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right.
All those.
Well, what about, go ahead.
No, what about what?
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, everyone thinks of Vigo as Aragorn in Lord of the Rings.
Right,
you know?
Of course. Wait, was
but
Vigo...
I always go to Easter Promises.
Was he in... No, he wasn't. That was a different film. But yeah, no, I mean, he's been in so many, I can't even keep track. But must have been dope working with him and that whole project.
It was incredible, man. It was incredible. And it was intense. And they allowed me to... Look, before we even went to do this whole thing, Mahershala pulled me aside, and we were outside. And he comes in and he says, look, man, I just want to tell you right now, everything we're about to go do is inbounds. Yeah. So don't hold back. Tell the truth. Don't feel bad. And we're going to get this.
So
and
tell
I said,
me.
All right. And I gave him a hug.
And you gave it your 100%.
I did. I gave him a hug, and we just went in and went to work, man. We went to work.
But
so,
now for
you,
you
it was cool.
What is it that, you know, why do people need to see Green Book?
Why do people need to see Green Book? Well, I mean, Green Book is, I think the beauty of Green Book is that it is, you get to see people transition from their long-held beliefs of whatever they may believe, where they're raised, of their racial biases, and you get to see them evolve through actually spending time with one another and getting to know one another and just be together. That's the beauty of the movie. In my opinion. But just from what I got from the movie,
yeah, but you
it's
were
really
part
nice
of it.
To see that.
You're part of it. So it's good to hear perspective from someone who's a part of it. Because, you know, when actors do films, then, you know, I mean, you're like, you move on to a next film. But there's always, something. What stayed with you with that film?
What stayed with me?
Yeah.
Kind of like what I was just saying a second ago. Is like what stuck with me after seeing that movie was that if we as people can spend time with one another and talk with one another and get to know each other, as opposed to just think we know things about other cultures and races and religions and what have you, then eventually we can overcome those things. You know, it is very inspiring, and it definitely goes beyond racial issues. I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean,
you gotta
I saw
see
the movie.
It. You got
to
see it, right?
Yeah.
Tell me for you.
It feels good too.
It is.
Know?
Well, it's also a comedy too. So there's some, you know, there's aspects of lightheartedness to
man,
it, right?
It's so funny.
Yeah. So what's on the horizon for funny. You? You know, I don't know where time goes. I always say that time is an illusion, but tonight it seems to be a real illusion because it is going through like a freight train. But tell us what's on the horizon for you. Any projects you're working on?
What's coming up? Well, I mean, I have a film I did called The Dirt, which is going to be coming. I don't know when it's coming. It's for Netflix. It's the autobiography, the true life autobiography from Motley Crue. And it's a pretty raucous film, man. It's pretty crazy. And I got to work on that with Jeff Tremaine, who's the guy. He actually did the documentary about Motley Crue. Uh-huh. And the whole thing is just, it's intense. It's insane. It goes through their entire history. And I got to work with Pete Davidson, actually, in most of my scenes were with Pete and the band. So, you know, Pete Davidson is?
Cool. Yeah, of course.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure.
If I'm in radio all these years, I hope I know.
Yeah, totally. Well, you seem to be very smart and up on pop culture, so you would know.
Listen, because I watch Netflix 80s and 90s. Right?
Cool. Yeah, so that's coming up. I just came back from Atlanta yesterday. I was working on a TV show called MacGyver on CBS.
Oh, that's really right. Cool. The new MacGyver. That's funny. I was at...
Yeah.
Oh, I got to wrap this up. They're looking at me. I got like 2 minutes. And we... Please. They're walking by the studio looking through the window like, you got to wrap. I'm like, no, we're having a conversation. But I was just at Bill Maher the other night and I saw that they had, you know, the new MacGyver posters up. And I was like, oh, shit, that's good. Because I grew up on MacGyver. But
yeah,
good for you to see on that too.
I had a great time. I got to do my own stunts. It was awesome.
Oh, that is so cool. All right, well, listen, we're going to have you back on the show because they're like, tell me I got to rap and time, I got to bounce.
Dude, all good. Thanks for your time.
But you know what? How can we find you? Of course. How can we find you on Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram is just at David Callaway, DavidKallaway, at David Callaway.
All right. Perfect. Well, David Callaway, thank you so much for joining me here tonight, my friend. I'm going to follow you on Instagram now and then come back anytime.
Likewise.
All right, my brother. Have a great night.
Dude,
I'm going to wrap this show
have
up.
A great Thanksgiving, all right?
All right. Yeah. Thanksgiving pass because this show airs next Sunday.
Nah, darn it, I missed it.
That's good, though. But, you know, that's the illusion of time.
All right,
because people are going to tune in next week and they're going to think it's Thanksgiving. But, David, thanks
you
so much.
You edit that out,
my brother. Have a good night. All right, y'all. I got to wrap this show
all
up.
Right,
thank you all for tuning
thanks,
in
y'all.
To Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. I love you. Good night and good karma. Remember to take life to the max. But of everything, be grateful, be thankful for the life you have right now. Because you know what? When you start showing gratitude in your life, I think that's when things start just opening up for you. The door is open when you show gratitude. So be grateful, be thankful, and show some love to the next person you see. I love you all for listening to Max and Friends here on LA Talk Radio.